Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1652, how to be a super communicator in your financial life and in all conversations, with Charles Duhigg, New York Times bestselling author of Super Communicators.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
So one of the things that we know is that there are these people who are consistent super communicators. They can connect with almost anyone, yeah, anytime. They're really good at having difficult conversations. And one of the things that they do is they ask 10 to 20 times as many questions as the average person.
Ah. Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. Conversation, it's the communal air that we breathe, but not all conversations are equal. Try having a financial conversation with somebody. Our guest today is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and New York Times bestselling author Charles Duhigg. His new book, Super Communicators, teaches how to unlock the secret language of connection and how we can all learn to be super communicators at work, in life, in our financial lives, during job interviews. Charles and I talk about the science of communication, the three important questions to understand before you're about to embark on an important conversation, and how to break the ice if you're trying to have a financial conversation with a loved one. Here's Charles Duhigg. Charles Duhigg, welcome to So Money.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and congratulations on multiple weeks on the New York Times bestseller list with your new latest book, Super Communicators, How to Unlock the Secret Language of Connection. How does it feel?
It's been great. I mean, not only that people are buying the book, but also hearing from readers and knowing that it's making a difference in their life. Yeah. As you know, you spend years writing a book and wondering, is anyone going to actually read this? And so when people actually do, it feels so rewarding.
Yeah. And, you know, the topic of communication, this is an ancient topic. I mean, humans, the very first humans, the first things they did was try to communicate. And yet still fast forward to the 21st century, we are learning about how to do this best. And I don't know if you came across this survey recently. I think it was on LinkedIn. They found that what all employers want right now, small, medium, large employers in prospective candidates, is the ability to communicate. And so before we get into your wonderful book and the advice in there, timing for this book is also really important. And I wonder why you think that communication is still something that we struggle with, and how maybe the internet has played a role in helping or hindering our ability to communicate well.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's actually two reasons I wrote this book right now. And before I tell you about them, it's important to sort of recognize communication is our superpower, right? It's Homo sapiens' superpower. It's the reason our species has succeeded so well, and that we can build families and communities and nations, that we can transmit knowledge to each other without having to experience the learning of it, which often involves some pain and hardship. So communication is something that is critical to how humans exist and how they move through the world and how they find meaning. And actually, our brains have evolved to be really good at communication, but they obviously evolved in a very different time and place. And so sometimes we have to be reminded of the skills that allow us to communicate well with others. And for me, I started working on this book, as I sort of saw the world around me seem to get worse at communication, right? As there seemed to be neighbors who couldn't talk to each other, family members who couldn't talk to each other because they disagreed about politics or about these things that seem relatively insignificant. Not that they are insignificant, but small parts of our lives that shouldn't make it impossible for us to connect with each other. And then the other thing that happened is just that at home, I found that, I'm a journalist, I'm a professional communicator. And I got into this bad pattern with my wife where I'd come home from work and after a tough day and I'd complain about my day, and she would offer me this very good advice. She'd say, like, why don't you take your boss out to lunch and get to know each other better? And instead of being able to hear what she was saying, I would get even more upset. I'd say, like, why aren't you supporting me? You should be outraged on my behalf. And then she would get upset because I was suddenly, you know, attacking her for giving me good advice. I think probably everyone listening has had some version of this happen in their own life, right? Where we bring up a problem and we bring up an emotion and the other person tries to solve it, or vice versa. And I wanted to understand why we kept on falling into this trap. And so that's what got me interested in learning about the science of communication.
Yeah. I love that you bring the science into this and that you call yourself out. You're like, I'm a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. I have an MBA from Harvard. I have struggled with communication. So this book now is an attempt to explain why communicating can go awry and what we can do to make it better. And at its core are a number of key ideas that I'd love to unpack with you. And throughout this conversation, maybe relating it back to our financial lives, because money communication, I talk about adding another layer of complexity to this phenomenon called communicating, but to talk about money, which is taboo and it's awkward, is important. And yet we struggle with that one as well. You write about how it's important whenever we speak to recognize which conversation are we actually participating in? And you say there are three different types of conversations. There's the practical, emotional, and social. Practical is, what's this really about? Emotional is, how do we feel? And social is, who are we? And if you don't know what kind of conversation you're having, you say the connection fails.
And this is what the researchers told me when I called them. They said, look, we're living through this golden age of understanding communication like never before. And one of the big things that we've discovered is we tend to think of a discussion as being about one thing, right? We're talking about our budget, or we're talking about the kids' grades, or we're talking about our day. But actually, every conversation is made up of different kinds of conversations. And in general, those different kinds of conversations, they tend to fall into one of three buckets. There are these practical conversations where we're discussing plans, where we're working on a budget together. We're talking about where we're going to go on vacation next year and how we save up for that. But then there's also emotional conversations. And in an emotional conversation, I might tell you how I'm feeling. I might say, you know, I'm anxious about our savings. I'm anxious about our retirement. And I don't necessarily want you to solve my feelings. I want you to empathize. I want you to show me that you understand that I'm feeling something that's either hard or perhaps great for me. And then there's finally social conversations, which is about how we relate to each other in society and the social identities that are important to us. And what often happens is that if you are having a different kind of conversation, it's very hard to hear each other. That's what would happen with my wife and myself. I would come home and I was having an emotional conversation. She responded with a practical conversation. We couldn't really hear each other or connect.
Right.
And this happens so frequently with money, right? Where we bring something up like the budget, or we bring up retirement, and it seems like a practical conversation, but it's not. It's an emotional conversation. And until we acknowledge and get aligned and have the same kind of conversation at the same moment, until I say, look, I'd love to talk about this, but I just want you to know I'm feeling really anxious. I feel guilty because I feel like I haven't saved enough for my retirement. I feel bad about myself. Until the other person says, look, listen, I hear you saying that. And like, I totally understand. That is natural. Let me tell you a little bit about how I'm feeling. Once we get aligned, we can have that conversation, that emotional conversation. And then we can move to the practical conversation. And we can start talking about, okay, what is the plan? What's the budget that we need to put our goals within reach? So what you asked about is the what's this really about conversation. That's really the beginning of a practical conversation. And often what we need to figure out what we're talking about is what we actually want to talk about, what we want out of this conversation. Because if I come to you and I say, I want us to come up with a budget, but I don't say, I want us to come up with a budget, but first I want to talk about, like, I'm actually really worried about this. It's been keeping me up at night. It's going to be hard for us to connect with each other. It's going to be hard for us to hear each other. And so the first step is figuring out, what does everyone want from this conversation?
Right. You know, you've heard of love language. That gets thrown around a lot. Like, is the shortcut to just know your partner's love language and that's how you're going to enter the conversation? I mean, do we just throw everything we've learned about communication out and just
read your mind? No, not at all. But the shortcut is to ask a question. Mm. So one of the things that we know is that there are these people who are consistent super communicators. They can connect with almost anyone, anytime. They're really good at having difficult conversations. And one of the things that they do is they ask 10 to 20 times as many questions as the average person.
Ah.
And so when I sit down in a conversation, I shouldn't assume that I know what your love language is. I shouldn't assume that I know what you really want to talk about.
Right.
But what I can do is I can ask you a question. And some questions are more powerful than others. Some questions are known within psychology as deep questions because they invite me to talk about my values or my beliefs or my experiences. And that can sound kind of overwhelming, but it's actually as simple as, you know, if you bump into someone who's a doctor, instead of saying, oh, where do you practice medicine? Saying, oh, what made you decide to become a doctor?
Right.
What do you love about practicing medicine? Did you always want to do that? Then we're inviting them to tell us something about who they are. So when it comes to, for instance, conversations about money, instead of sitting down and saying, okay, where do we want to go on vacation? Is to say, listen, just tell me a little bit, like, how are you feeling about money? Or what does money mean to you? Or like our finances right now. Tell me how you feel about our finances. Before we get into the budget, just tell me what's going on with you. Put differently, the key is don't ask someone about the facts of their life. Ask them how they feel about their life. Mm.
I find that sometimes you need an icebreaker to get the conversation flowing. You may be in a relationship with someone who's resistant to money conversations, even though these aren't hard fact questions. It's like, how do you feel? Or tell me a story questions. That even that can be a non-starter. And so for the other person in the relationship who's trying to instigate, do you recommend they share first? They go first to sort of like set an example or let the other person know this is a safe place. We can share.
You could, particularly if you say something vulnerable, it's going to invite your partner to feel like their vulnerability is safe. You could also just ask a fun question. Like, okay, look, like we should talk about our budgets, but I'm just wondering if we had $100,000 more than we do right now, like, what's the number one thing you would want to do with it? Mm-hmm. What would bring you the most happiness, the most relief, the most joy? That's not a hard question, right? Because and you could picture someone saying, oh, I want to go on a crazy vacation. Or you could picture someone saying, oh, I want to pay down all of our credit card debt and all of our student loans. And when we ask that question and we listen closely, and most importantly, when we prove that we're listening closely, when we do something like say, oh, what I hear you saying is, You would like to use money to have fun, but what's more important to you is safety, is using that extra money to try and remove this source of anxiety for you. Mm. When we prove to someone that we're listening to them, that's when suddenly they feel genuinely safe.
Right.
Because we've asked them something that's an easy question to answer, kind of a fun question to answer. And then we've proved to them that we really want to understand what they're saying, that we're processing their words. And that makes them more likely to listen to us in return.
It just, for me, everything you're saying, it kind of, for me, it goes back to some of the journalism 101 that I learned, just, you know, how to conduct an interview, how to really get to the root of what someone's trying to say, or, you know, or the story, really being investigative, but not in a in a weird way. Like, really, it's just listening. Yeah. Listening is a big part of being a good communicator. And to that point, you open your book with this really fascinating story of a man who worked for the FBI, who became sort of this model of communicating so powerfully, and it seemed so effortless. And look, this guy wasn't, you know, the most charismatic, tall, charming, you know, he wasn't Prince Charming, but he knew how to connect with people and he became a study. Can you talk a little bit about our friend Felix and yeah. why you chose to start the book with him and how he's inspired many pages in your book?
So I love this guy. Felix Segala is just this. If you ever meet him, he looks like a middle-aged dad. He's got like kind of a pudgy, you know, pudgy middle, and he's got this like kind of goofy mustache. And yet he is one of the best negotiators, one of the best communicators inside the FBI. And the reason why is because he does a lot of the things we were just talking about. He asks questions and he asks deep questions. He shows people that they're listening to him. But this is the difference between doing an interview as a journalist and having a conversation, is that when people share things with him, he shares things in return. Right? As an interviewer, oftentimes we ask questions, but an interview is different from a conversation. In a conversation, we expect that both people are going to bring their full selves right. to this discussion. And so one of the things that Felix would do is that, for instance, he would ask someone, you know, tell me about the earliest memory you have, or your most cherished memory from the last couple of years. And one of the researchers he was talking to says, you know, actually, it was my sister's wedding, because it was the last time that we were all together as a family before my mom passed away. Mm-hmm. And Felix asks a couple of follow-up questions. He sort of shows that he's listening and processing what the guy says. And then he says, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me, because one of my favorite memories of my sister is her wedding, because she looked so beautiful. And she passed away from cancer about 4 years after that. Now suddenly you have two people who are being real and vulnerable with each right. other. And it's not being mandated. It's not being forced. It's being invited. But once you know that somebody has gone through something similar to what you've gone through, it's hard not to feel a connection to them. It's hard not to feel like, even if you know, you're talking about politics and you disagree with each other, even if you're talking about finances and it's a tough conversation, when I know that we have felt something similar, when I know what we have in common in a real and meaningful sense, we feel connected. And that makes the rest of those conversations so much easier.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
See ya.
You know what I love most about your advice, Charles, is that it provides equal access to everybody to do this. Like you say, we are all built for super communicating. We all have the inherent skills. It's not always where, especially in your financial life, you feel you have equal access to something that can give you a leg up and can make your financial life easier.
And the truth of the matter is, you know, as I mentioned to you before we started the interview, I love talking about money. Like I think money is fascinating. I have an MBA. I think that, you know, my dad has passed away now, but one of the things I love talking to him about was the stock market and how money works. And I talk to my own son, my 15-year-old, about it all the time. And I think for many people, talking about money is a source of stress. It's a source of anxiety. It's a source of feeling bad. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we can do is when we start making those conversations better, when we decide, look, I want to talk about money and I want to talk about it in a fun way. I don't want to just wait until there's a problem. I want to talk about what's going well with my spouse. I want to talk about how money works in the world. Then we make that topic more approachable.
Right.
And as we practice it, as we make it more approachable and we think about it more, we actually get better at it. Right. One of the things that I think is most important about money is that money is a language, and much like learning French or Spanish or Farsi, the more that you practice it, the better you become at thinking in that language. Mm-hmm. And so part of it is just having those dumb, easy conversations about money that gets you into the practice so that when the big, important conversations come up, they don't feel so scary to you.
Yeah, I always say, like, have a running conversation via text with your partner. And it can be something simple like, should we buy this? Or did you check out this thing that we were looking at? It's on sale, you know, or what's the password again to our bank account? You know, like,
yeah,
it's all good. It's all fair game.
Exactly. Or even that fun one. Like, if we won the lottery tomorrow, what's the first thing we would spend it on?
Right.
Because what you're really asking there is, what's the thing that brings you the most value, mm-hmm. right? A dollar is worth a dollar, but a dollar spent on a vacation versus a dollar spent on paying off a credit card feels very different to different people. And when I know what brings you relief and what brings you pleasure, then I know I start to understand how you think about money and how you think about comparing values yeah. between different things.
When you discuss the three different decision-making conversations, and I'll repeat them, what's this really about? How do we feel? Who are we? What I'm learning is that in order to have helpful, effective conversations, creating some boundaries around these conversations is important. Like, maybe boundaries sounds restricting, but what you're really doing is you're giving yourself clarity around what it is actually that you're trying to accomplish within that conversation. And you say it's important to just kind of address this head on, like before you start talking, you actually recommend saying, hey, which kind of conversation are we going to have?
Yeah. You know, my wife does this with me all the time. Like, when I come home after a tough day now, she'll often say, look, do you want me to help you solve this problem? Or do you just need to like vent and complain and get this off your chest, right? She's really asking, do you want to have a practical conversation?
Right.
What's this really about? Or do you want to have an emotional conversation? How do we feel? And when she asks me that, it actually feels very good because sometimes I haven't asked myself that question. In schools, they often teach teachers that when a student comes up and they have something important they want to talk about, the teacher should start by saying, okay, let me ask you really quickly. For this conversation, do you want to be helped? Do you want to be heard? Or do you want to be hugged? Which are the three kinds of conversations, right? The practical, the emotional, and the social. And the reason why asking that is so valuable is because it helps the student say, here's what I need. Here's what I want from this conversation. So absolutely, you can absolutely start by simply saying, what kind of conversation do you want to have? You don't have to make it formal and awkward. You can just say like, hey, you know, how can I help you out?
Right.
But then the other thing is to listen, right? To listen to how people answer your questions. Does it seem like they're talking about their feelings, or does it seem like they're talking about practicalities, or does it seem like they're talking about other people and sort of how we relate to each other? Once we know to look for these different kinds of conversations, they're very easy to recognize. We just have to be told to look for them.
Yeah. And often what I find is like, I'll give the example of my brother and I, he'll just say, what do you think, Farnoosh? And that's my invitation to then give my advice. Before he says that though, I am not giving an opinion.
Or if somebody comes to you and they're talking about something, you know, this is bothering me, or that's bothering me, or I like this, or here's my thoughts on politics. I find one of the best questions, and this is a deep question, is just to say, tell me why that's important to you. Like, what is it about this that like, it's obviously you've been thinking about this. Like, why do you think you're thinking about this and not other things? And often what they do is they tell you what's really going on, right? If you ask your brother that, they sort of explain, here's what's going on inside my head. And then they can say, what do you think? Like, what do you think I should do? How would you address this? And they're giving you permission to get into a practical conversation, to give them advice.
In the context of interviewing for a job. Now, I know that's an interview, but we'd like to approach that, I think, as a conversation as well, because I think
absolutely
it's best for both parties. You're going to be conversing with these people at work if you end up working with them. So let's practice it in the interview. Would love for you to apply some of your framework in that room, in that context.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the best way to have a great interview is to make it a conversation instead of just an interview, right? Anyone who's ever hired before knows asking the same question to person after person, it gets kind of boring after a little while, right? Like when someone comes in and they want to have a conversation instead of just participating in an interview, it feels like such a huge relief. So what should we do if we're the candidate, the person who's hoping to get employed, and we walk in and someone's asking us questions? Well, the first thing is to also ask questions of our own. Like if they ask, you know, what were your biggest accomplishments? What are you most proud of from your last job? Well, you should answer that question, but then you can say, I'm just wondering, before we get on to the next question, like how would you answer that question? Like, you work here and I want to understand what this place is like. Like, what have you done here that you're really proud of? And the reason that's so useful is because not only is somebody going to enjoy being asked about their accomplishments, but it does give you some real insight into that workplace, right? That if that person says, actually, the thing I'm most proud of is that we've come together as a team and we communicate with each other really well, you're learning something about this is a workplace where communication and teamwork is prioritized versus someone else who says, oh, I launched my own product and, you know, and now we're selling it. When we ask questions ourselves in an interview, we make it into a conversation. And then it's important to show that we're listening. This isn't just lip service that we're giving to try and impress the person, but to say, oh, what I hear you saying is communication is really important in this workplace. Am I getting that right? Then all of a sudden you look like you're a genius because you're trying to understand this place where you want to work and you're listening to what other people tell you.
Right. That's brilliant. We began this conversation touching on the timing of your book and what's happening in the world. And what's your advice, Charles, for young adults who've, you know, especially the digital natives who grew up, everything is technology driven and they're communicating, they're texting, they're not even calling their families and friends anymore. What's your advice for how they can start practicing these good communication skills? Less time on a screen, more time in real life? I mean, that's a hard prescription, even for me.
You know, the truth of the matter is, the channel of communication matters much less than what we do when we're trying to communicate. If you're going on your screen and you're just watching TikTok and video after video, you're not having conversations with people. That's not great. That's where we know that depression comes from. We know that there's this comparison anxiety. You know, I have two teenagers at home, my kids, And they text and DM and send emojis to their friends all the time. And those are real conversations. I look at them and I have no idea what a string of emojis means, but they explain to me, like, they're basically sending each other emotional messages using emojis rather than words. And I think what's important is the more that we lean into conversations, the more that we don't get worried about being anxious or that we're going to look awkward or that we're going to be goofy, the more that we, you know, call up a friend and say, like, hey, how you doing? I haven't caught up with you in a little bit. Or we send a friend a text and say, what's going on with you? Like, let me tell you a little bit about my life. The more that we practice conversation, the better we get at it. And it doesn't matter if that conversation is face-to-face, if it's over the phone, if it's over a screen. It's good to have all kinds of conversations because different types, different channels of communication have slightly different rules and different norms. But the point is, our brains have evolved to be really good at communication. Our brains have evolved to crave connection. Mm-hmm. And the way that we make these good behaviors, these good skills into habits is simply by practicing them. And like anything, you know, whether you're learning to read or learning to ride a bike, at first it's a little bit hard, right? It feels a little bit awkward, but then pretty soon it feels natural. Conversation is the same way. The more that we push ourselves to have meaningful conversations, the better and better and better we get at it.
In some ways, this new book of yours is like the third of a trilogy that you've written three books, right?
Yeah.
All sort of stemming from, you know, behavior and human psychology. Your first one is called The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business. Second book is Smarter, Faster, Better, The Transformative Power of Real Productivity, and now Super Communicators. Which one is foundational? Is this in some ways the Super Communicators book, in some ways maybe the first one you would have written?
Well, so what I would say is that they're different. So The Power of Habit is about the science of habit formation, how we understand and change the habits in our lives, how we can create them, what we understand about how to program automatic behavior. And that's really, really important, right? Being able to have the self-discipline and the habit to exercise in the morning or to go to work and be productive is really useful. But it's very focused on ourselves. It's very inwardly focused. And life does not happen all inward, right? We can go to work, and if we're really productive at work, that's great. But if we can't get along with our teammates, it doesn't matter how productive we are. We're still not going to be able to help that company succeed. And so I think that Power of Habit looks inward. Super Communicators looks outward. And it's about not just how do I change myself for the better, but how do I connect with other people so that we all become better? And anyone who works in an office knows most of your time now is spent in teams. Most of my success is dependent on the success of my peers. Most of my happiness comes from developing real relationships with people and investing in those relationships, relationships that aren't just transitory, but I know that I can count on for months or for years. And in order to do that, we have to know how to have conversations. We have to understand how to connect with each other. And so I don't know that Super Communicators is more foundational, except to say that in today's world, connecting with other people is critical. And the more we understand the skills behind it, because anyone can become a super communicator, it's just a set of skills that anyone can learn. The more we understand those skills, the better we get at it.
As you're speaking, I'm thinking of a disagreement, argument that I had with a family member, and it was over parenting styles. And, you know, in the aftermath of that, I'm racking my brain. I am trying to figure out where we went wrong, whose fault was what. And your framework has really simplified that for me, which is just that we were having two very different conversations. My family member wanted to have sort of an advice-driven, how can we help? How can I, you know, fix the problem conversation?
And a very practical conversation.
And I just wanted to vent and felt very much... You know, it got to the point where it got heated. You know, I'm not trying to be condescending. Well, it sounds like you are, you know, and then you start to focus on their attitude and behavior, as opposed to just the framework, which was a mismatched framework. She had a different framework than I did for that conversation. And so from now on, for conversations, I think not just about money, but like, what are the other heated conversations? Parenting, politics, obviously.
And can I ask? Yeah. Yeah. Do you have kids?
I have two children. Yeah. And she has a child. Yeah. So we're both parents and we both had very long days with our kids in different ways, but we were together under for one occasion. And so now we're at dinner and we're sharing. And she was informing me a lot about different sort of parenting techniques, which I wanted nothing to do with. I just wanted to share. And we were both in our right, but it was just, it got awkward very quickly. And that's just how I'm going to describe it.
How different that could have been and parenting is hard, right? Parenting is,
it's so
nobody tells you how hard it is to be a parent until you have kids. And by then it's too late. You can't undo it. And I think that, think about how different that conversation would have been if rather than sort of launching into advice and launching into venting, you guys had started by saying, I'm just wondering, like, for you, how is it being a parent? Like, is this something you're enjoying? Are you, like, what are the frustrations and what are the joys for you? Why is being a parent meaningful for you? Like, what's the thing that you really, that makes it important?
What have you done? Yeah. What were you thinking? No.
And what you might find is that your family member says, you know, actually the thing that I'm enjoying right now is I feel like I've figured some stuff out and I love to share that. I love to share what I've figured out with other people. And you might say, actually what I figured out right now is I am exhausted and there are ways that I could be better at this, but I'm so overwhelmed right now that I can't even think about those. Like, I just need to have a drink and take a break.
Yeah.
And I think if you had asked each other questions and started by just saying, you know, tell me what this means to you, you would have been able to see what both of you wanted and needed from that conversation in a way that you could have talked about everything. You could have vented together for a little while, and then you could have talked about advice together for a little while. And it would have been a satisfying conversation, a meaningful conversation. Because you would have wanted to understand each other.
Yeah. Charles Duhigg, thank you so much for this meaningful conversation. I'm so glad that we were able to connect, and I've learned so much in just 30 minutes with you. No wonder your book is super popular right now and flying off the shelves. Congratulations, and I look forward to your next book.
Thank you so much, and I'm a big fan of the show, so thank you for having me on. This is so kind of you.
Thanks to Charles for joining us. His book again is called Super Communicators. I'll see you back here on Friday for Ask Farnoosh, and I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.